Wake up! Wake up!
Mike Mulligan, David Haw.
Tommy Hotovy, the Cubs pitching coach.
I'm doing well. Thanks for having me. How are you guys doing?
Said earlier this morning, I don't quite understand the decision to go with Justin Steele today, given what might be at stake. What was the biggest reason why?
I think if we were, calling up somebody to pitch in this game today, it would send a completely different message than if, with Justin Steele starting.
Steele sets at the belt, kicks and delivers. Up high, ball four. Langoliers draws a walk, and now the A's have loaded the bases for the cleanup man, Daz Cameron.
And I think that's going to bring out Craig Counsell. And because of pitch count and looking a little tired, I believe, on the mound with running around a little bit, that'll be the end of the day for Steele.
Cubs down by two here in the ninth. The pitch. And a ground ball hit to second, fielded by Geloff. To second for one. Wilson to first. In time, double play. Ball game over. And the A's take the series, winning the finale by a final of 5-3.
Oh, my God,
yeah,
the White
Sox. Frustrating.
On the ground, knocked down by Forgis. Here comes Wagaman. No throw. Ball game. The Angels win it in the 13th inning.
Start your mornings with Mully and Haw, 5:30 till 10 a.m. on 670 The Score.
And this is The Serious Show.
Let's go. Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score. I mean, I know we got a lot of Bears talk, and we got to get to that. How do you lose a series if you're the Chicago Cubs? How do you lose a series to the Oakland A's, who were just beaten by, wait for it, the White Sox?
Morning, Molly. Yeah, welcome back. It's Thursday, and more Cub angst and disappointment, a feeling of finality.
That's what you feel.
It's a feeling of finality.
That's right.
After they lose to the lowly A's. I think I can use that descriptor accurately. The lowly A's.
Yes.
And this was not the Cubs' A game. They were
boy.
Not wow. up to the task.
That was awful.
I thank you.
Pun. That result. It's just awful.
Well, I think
and there's no business losing.
You can take it the night before when you right. watch Mason Miller hit 104 on the gun. And Seiya Suzuki did not even see it, and he strikes out, and he ends the game. You can respect the fact that Mason Miller, one of the most feared closers in baseball, shut down the Cubs on that night, but you can't take what happened yesterday.
Should have traded.
Well, you should have, yeah, absolutely. You know how good Mason Miller was? So good that on the Cubs pregame show, right here on The Score, Bruce Levine, who does a daily little insider segment, talked to Mason Miller.
Well,
I mean,
does that mean you'll be speaking to him on Saturday?
I will not be. I'm taking a little hiatus, but they might be the expanded interview Saturday.
There you go.
With Ryan McGuffey and Bruce Levine.
Oh, it's
Guff's doing
good.
A great job.
Yeah.
Doing a great job. But your point is well taken. The A's should have no business coming into Chicago and taking 2 out of 3 from the Cubs, who are fighting for a playoff spot. Or
after
were.
Losing a series to the White Sox, they get to stay in town. That's a nice. I'll tell you what. Any team that gets to come to Chicago for a week in the middle of their season, or in this case, the end of their season, what a treat!
Well, I think if they stayed another day, they'd want to move.
It's
the franchise
still,
here.
It's still super nice. The weather's still super nice, and to come here.
You kidding
and
me? It's great.
I just said
this is like postcard weather. I know. I can't believe it, though. Can you? September 19th. When's the last time it rained?
I don't know. And in fact, I think we might need rain. I think there are people with lawns that would like
I
some
don't
rain.
Disagree with that. It's just it's been ideal. You could do whatever you want in this weather this month.
How long does this go on? I remember, I can't think of the name of the coach, but there was a coach who came here who had been in Chicago, and he came back and he made a wager that he could wear shorts through October. He could get to the end of October in shorts. And I got to tell you, like it's September, 19th today? Okay, you can get to October for sure.
No
easily.
Doubt. That's easy.
Can we get to Halloween without having the actual fall weather that we know so well?
Well, just when you say that, on October 20th, it's going to be freezing rain and sleet.
Right.
And then just when you get used to that.
He won his wagers, though, I should say.
You know that Halloween, the trick-or-treating will be impaired or compromised because it will be snowing or raining or sleeting. Yeah, I don't want to get too carried away. We don't want to jinx it. You just gave it the Malecki, the weather Malecki.
Yeah.
I don't know if there's such a thing, but just enjoy it. Just enjoy the summer-like weather. Because it's great. Great running weather.
Yeah.
Walking, cycling, whatever you want to do. Get some exercise. Get outside.
Get outside. Get some exercise.
Yeah. Actually, I'll be right back. I'm just going to go for a walk.
David, you should go run. Just run around the block.
Not this hour.
No.
I do see people on the lakefront at this hour. I always admire their commitment. When I'm driving in and I see people
trying to get the workout in before they go to work.
Yes.
Yeah.
You know that's just a long day ahead.
Yep.
I wonder what's ahead. I always wonder that when I'm passing somebody who's already jogging before 5 a.m.
It goes through my mind, are they working an overnight shift? Are you trying to get a workout in before you go to bed?
No, I think it's the opposite.
Okay, I think you're right.
I think they're either traveling, they're either got a high-powered meeting or a really long day, and they know that just you've got to do that to get it out of the way. I've been in that situation, and I know what that feels like, and they feel so much better after doing it.
I had a horrible experience where I was, you know, around college-aged, and I had been out all night, and I had to kind of break up with the girl. It was like a nightmare. And I finally get out, and I get in the car, and I'm driving back to the South Side. I'm driving down Lakeshore Drive on, let's say it's like a Saturday morning after a Friday night, and I'm all kind of just emotionally wrecked. I run into an Ironman competition. There's people driving to the Ironman competition honking at each other.
Yeah.
And I'm feeling like lower than whale dung. And I'm just like, oh my God, all these people are living their lives, their best lives. And here I am, an emotional wreck trying to get through traffic.
You ran into a highly motivated group of people.
Oh my God.
Ready to go.
Literally like high-fiving each other.
Oh, that's not even adrenaline necessarily. That's just the way they're wired.
Like just have an ass.
I thought you were going to tell me a tale of woe.
No,
about you being on Lakeshore Drive, and there were trucks there.
No,
because nothing bothers you more than trucks on Lakeshore Drive.
You know what really gets to me is like so they've torn up Lakeshore Drive. Okay, so the whole thing is kind of torn up, and it's because they have to fix it, and they have to fix it. Why? Because so many trucks are
dun, dun, dun.
They're not supposed to have trucks because they're not supposed to be repairing it twice a year. Someone ought to call the city and let them know. Oh, you need money. This town needs money.
Roads are in bad shape.
Get out on Lakeshore Drive.
Roads are in bad shape.
Ticketing.
I'm blaming the roads for what happened to me yesterday. You were not here. Welcome back.
Thank you,
buddy.
Hope
everything went well.
Yeah, I put it all behind me.
That's good. <Da-dun-dun. laughs> So I'm leaving yesterday. And got some things to do, some appointments, and just it was a busy day. I didn't have to get up at 3 in the morning to run, but I was in a hurry. Get out to the parking garage, and got a flat tire.
No.
Yeah.
It was in your garage flat?
Yes.
That never happens.
Normally
you hit something. And
I must have hit something, but then I get out there, and it's like, whoa. This is my third flat tire since April.
Yeah, you've had three.
And back in the spring, remember, it was back-to-back days. Back-to-back days.
I had a flat tire on Lakeshore Drive, and then I followed what you're supposed to do, wrote a letter to the city, sent them the photos, blah, blah, blah. They told me that, no, there was nothing wrong with, it wasn't their fault.
They didn't care.
Now they tore up Lakeshore Drive to fix it, okay? I doubt I'm alone.
I know. Yeah. I should do that, but
you should write a letter.
I don't know.
Harshly worded letter to J.P. Pritzker. J.B. Pritzker.
I don't know that he's the one to write to.
He's got the money to cover your tire.
The city has no
change
money?
Your tire before you left?
Yes.
Wow, that's a drag.
It was a drag. And I was, not in a great state afterward.
Yeah.
I had to go up to the 11th floor, shower.
Oh, you showered here.
Of course.
Okay.
Take care of, because I wasn't good at...
personal hygiene
my
matters.
My arms are, covered in soot or whatever off the tire.
Mm.
Bad. Bad. Then you're sweaty. You're jacking up the tire, car.
That's hard work in an enclosed space.
The lug nuts were very tight.
What'd you call me? lug nut.
No, you're just a big lug. nut.
Lug nut.
Anyway, yeah, you know, it's a character builder.
Yeah.
So we got to look at it, right? Character builder. Because you can't let it dictate the rest of your day.
See, that's a very powerful take control of your life attitude.
Well, you have no other choice. If you let a flat tire at 10:15 ruin your day,
right,
you're going to regret it.
My brother once, you know, because he's insane, worked as a rehab guy. He worked at a place, and he was saying he had a full-time job at the time. He just was looking to fill all his hours because he's insane. He was a young, ambitious guy. Anyway, he started working at this place, but he was telling me that the difference between you and someone who's like an alcoholic is that if they came out and found their car in that situation, they'd go back in and drink a fifth. Like, that would be it. Or they'd go to the pub. Mm-hmm. You know, that would be it. That would be your reaction to anything that went awry. What you got to do is exactly what you did, is roll up your sleeves and fix it. And then go to work and be on time. I don't know how you squeezed a shower in, but God bless.
You've got to compartmentalize. I had to squeeze a shower in because the places that I was going, could not show up in the state that I was in.
Right.
As a texter points out, it was brake dust. I'm not quite sure what to call it, but my arms and hands were dirty.
Why would you? I mean, so you had like a slow leaking flat.
Must have. Hmm. I must have, and just not realized it.
Yeah.
Or run over something on the way in. Then all of a sudden,
a nail. Yeah.
Then slowly, like a Bears fan watching Sunday night, slowly deflating.
Then you just take that tire and you throw it in the back. And then have you brought it in anywhere yet to get it?
Not yet. I mean, I was busy yesterday.
That was yesterday.
I had the same issue yesterday too. I was literally yesterday in the pick six. We're doing that. I got a notification on my phone that I had a leak in my tire.
Are you kidding?
As I was driving in.
Your car called you?
Yeah. It texted me. It let me know.
That's
like
cool.
It notified me.
Brandon's got people.
I know.
And I was like, wait, what? And I found out it was a nail in my tire. And it made me think like something had to happen on my way to work here.
Dun, dun, dun. Well, by the way, getting out of this parking garage,
hey,
very special navigation system.
I wasn't here yesterday. I did not hammer a nail in your tire. Okay?
That is so bizarre.
Has the thought gone through?
Yeah. What did you do, Brandon?
I feel like it had to be something with the construction. That's what I think.
But what did you do after the show? Because I got out of here before you did.
Well, first thing I had to do was go in the garage, and I have an air pump in my car, so I had to pump up the tire because it was super low. It was at like 6
right,
or something like that. And then I had to hurry up, drive to a tire shop, get it filled up real quick. It cost me about like $15 or something like that. Not bad.
Yeah.
And then I'm good to go. So hopefully, fingers crossed. I was just scared driving on the way here again.
Yeah.
Why didn't I do that?
That's pretty good.
That's pretty good.
Why don't you have?
Why do I have an app that tells me my tire's flat?
Dave would be out there with a bicycle pump. I'm gonna do it. That's not gonna work.
I'm the tryhard guy. You know.
I will manage my problem.
But all right, that's a good way to handle it. That sounds much smoother than what I did. I just was like, all right.
The key is he's got a compressor with a little, you know what
That's
I mean?
A pretty good key.
That's good.
You have to have one of those.
Yeah.
All right.
Or that wouldn't work.
Got to think ahead.
Yeah, I really had a hard time getting out of here the other day. I realized that the only way to do it is to drive all the way down to the end and then come up in that little block.
Yeah.
And then you can get back underneath that way.
Yeah.
But instead, I just went against traffic. I drove down the lane. Like, all of our lanes are closed going south. I just drove down the lane coming north. And there was another car. And
you do what you got to do.
We just took turns, yeah. And then I got in the other lane. But it was a pain in the keister. Everything.
Every
it's amazing.
Day.
Every street
day.
Is
Every
closed. Day. So you get that. And we are in the lower bowels of the city, right? We're like in lower. I see a lot of that Chicago PD show film down there because I think they do some of the
Don't chases. Mess with Hank Voight.
I didn't mess
don't you
with
dare.
Him. But
Hank Voight means business.
Yeah.
If I see him.
If you see him.
Pay him.
Tell him I said.
Pay him off.
That's right.
630. Come on, Hall. You break a sweat changing a tire? Yeah.
I'd break a sweat doing pretty much anything.
You're going to break a sweat changing a tire on an 80-degree day.
If I take a warm shower, I will be sweating when I'm driving to work.
Oh, boy. So anyway, that was yesterday. Ruthie did a great job. She's a natural. And then we heard from the Bears at Halas Hall.
Yeah.
They're back to work.
We got an injury report. So yeah. That's good, right?
Well, it's
good to have the information.
The information you need is not information you like.
There's
Tevin Jenkins being on the injury report.
And unable to practice.
Was not a good development in Bears land.
Ditto Keenan Allen still can't practice.
Don't like that. Don't like the way that's trending.
Terry Blassingame not practicing. And Zach Pickens, who had come back, is back on the injured list, this time with a groin.
Big names, Keenan Allen, mm-hmm. Tevin Jenkins. Those are the two players that would have to be accounted for or replaced.
Limited with a groin.
Limited on a good day.
Andrew Billings, who's been phenomenal, limited with a groin.
Yeah.
Kieran Amagaji, who came back from an injury, limited with a quad. That's his quad injury. Not good.
Not good.
And then we got three more. Roma Dunze with the knee, Montez Sweat with an elbow, DeMarcus Walker with a foot, all limited.
So
that's your injury report.
Bears a little bit banged up, trying to get their offensive line whole before the Colts challenge. They have an opportunity in Indy to run the ball down the Colts' throats. Essentially, that's what this weekend is all about. You want an identity? Here's an invitation. Run the ball against the worst rushing defense in the NFL.
Yeah, they are allowing a ridiculous amount of yardage, 474 yards in two games.
That's a lot.
That's ridiculous.
That's like high school numbers.
Yeah.
Those are high school numbers. Those are what you do, like your sophomore running back that's bigger than everybody else, like has 270 yards rushing. That the Colts, and now they're without DeForest Buckner.
I remember when I was working for Taylor, there was some kid at some high school who had run for over 1,000 yards in a game. I'm not making it up.
Derrick Henry?
And they were like, that's impossible. That couldn't happen. Anyway, I think he went out there to see the kid, and the kid gets the ball, and he's running to his right. They were counting wherever he got the ball. Like, it didn't
yards
matter if
traveled,
he was
horizontal and vertical? Oh, my gosh.
That's how you get to 1,000 yards in a game.
Sounds like something.
You have the person that's keeping the notes of it.
That sounds like something Pro Football Focus would measure.
But they wouldn't claim it was yards gained.
No.
But it was so funny.
That is
because
funny. Yeah,
it's hysterical. Like, either this kid's the single greatest player who's ever taken a breath.
But you know what? If it got Taylor Bell to see him and discover him,
it worked.
Yeah, because you need those things. But the Bears, with their stable of running backs, whoever they may be this weekend, have to be excited about the chance to get well against the Colts.
Yes.
Don't you think so?
The only spanner in the works, if I may use that term.
You may.
Is that the fine folks in Vegas, and we will talk to Mike Palm, our buddy, our man in Vegas, in the 925 hour, one of the great circus sports guys. They are not favored in the game, David. They are a 1.5-point underdog at Indy. So I get it. Indy is at home, and the thinking is they'll play better at home. They're also 0-2.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess the argument would be they played the Houston Texans better than the Bears did, even though there were billions of yards.
They did do that. Then they lost to the Packers without Jordan Love. So I don't understand the confidence or faith in a Colts team that has a young quarterback likely to throw you the ball and a defense that can't stop the run. Nonetheless, what I look at, and I'm no expert about the Vegas line, but I think that it's as much of a show of no confidence in the Bears.
That's it.
And Caleb Williams as it is anything about the Colts.
And, technically, it no longer exists wholeheartedly, but you get three for being at home. So being a 1.5-point dog is almost like your favorite, as weird as that
in a way,
sound.
In a way, it is. And I think it reflects the expectation that this will be a close game. I'm not sure that it will be. But there's a realization that the Colts probably are going to be a little bit better at home, but the Bears are going to give them all they can handle, and this will be competitive. I still don't understand why the Bears are underdogs.
We have a texter. You guys think the Bears are good, or is this another year?
I think the Bears are a good football
More
team.
More of the same.
I think the Bears can be a good football team. their offensive line is much weaker and was exposed much more than I thought early on. Even though the AFC championship game could include the Houston Texans, I think that the Bears were less competitive on the offensive line than they should have been. Mm-hmm. They've got a lot of room to grow there. Mm-hmm. And this offense through two games that we thought that they were drafting touchdowns.
What about the damn receivers working that can't run a proper route? Sorry, that was just one of the defenses for the line. That there are many elements, not the least of which is perhaps the offensive line coach / run game coordinator vis-a-vis the new offensive coordinator vis-a-vis the terrible running game.
I've got thoughts on that. I'm glad we're addressing that in the
pick
six.
I'm glad we're addressing that too.
Yeah, because I think that it's a convenient scapegoat to look at. Coaches.
I just think there's a lot of convenient scapegoats. I think there are a lot of scapegoats. Here's the thing, David. I mean, when you start talking about the offensive line being as bad as they are, does that have a lot to do with whoever's putting the offensive line together? Does that have a lot to do with whatever the actual player is, the talent level? Does that have to do with how long they've spent together and learning each other? I mean, I just
all are good questions.
All good elements of yes, worth discussing
they
as
are.
We talk about what is the biggest problem with the team.
Fair questions. They're the right ones. I also think that as you watched the Bears Sunday night, as you watched them and then you rewatched the game,
yeah,
there are very fundamental things that they're not doing at the point of attack on the offensive line. And I'm not going to pretend to sit here and talk about O-line play like Olin Krutz can, or a lot of the experts in town that used to play offensive line in the city. But you just see very basic things not being done, and you see man-to-man, one-on-one, guys losing battles. And that is hard to pin on coaching. That's all about, are they capable of doing this or not?
Yeah, I got to tell you, it is a really interesting problem because it's one that they've earned, honestly. In other words, they are reaping what they have sown. Dare I put it that way? When you don't, Olin has a really good take on this because he says every year people ask him every year, you get near the draft and everyone's like, you got to get a receiver, you got to get, and every year people ask him what's wrong with the offensive line.
Well, to his point, and he's exactly right. You get what you pay for. Right now, the Bears around the National Football League are the second. There's only one other team that has devoted more resources into the wide receiver position in terms of salary. And they're the ninth lowest in terms of offensive line salary. So they're in the bottom third of the league in terms of what they commit to their offensive line in terms of resources.
Yeah.
And they're second in the league in terms of what they're paying the wide receiving corps. You get what you pay for.
Mm-hmm.
And the Bears aren't paying for much on the offensive line, and they're not getting much in return.
All right, we're going to get right to it. We'll start talking about that next, the pick six. We've got some questions addressing this stuff. We're going to talk about all the stories of the day. We'll pick them apart. It's Mully and Haw at Chicago Sports Radio, 6-7 to the score.
It's Pick Six with Mully and Haw, where we debate the top six sports stories of the day and then open it up to you, the Chicago sports fan. Call us at 312-644-6767, or you can tweet your thoughts at Mully Haw. Pick Six with Mully and Haw starts now.
The Pick Six is sponsored by Affinity Whole Health. Visit feelgreatillinois.com to learn more about their testosterone therapy or weight loss options. Guys, do you agree with Caleb Williams that the biggest problem with the Bears beating the Blitz is, quote, communication?
One, communication. Two, is making just faster adjustments throughout the game, having better communication between myself, coaches, and offensive line and things like that, making sure we're on the same page and making the adjustments we need to, in game. Obviously, you have adjustments and things like that that you practice throughout the week, but, you know, the other team's job is to try and confuse you, throw different things at you, different looks, and so being able to, you know, adjust quickly in game, I think is the most important thing, and starts with communication.
How much confidence do you have in Williams to handle pressure better Sunday than he did against the Texans?
Well, I don't know that it's on him. I don't know that he can do that, frankly. I don't know that he knows everything that he's looking at, and I'm not sure that the I don't know that it's on him. I think that this is a real problem because the center has a lot to do with it, and even when they went silent count, they had Nate Davis telling the center when to snap. So I just don't know who knows what the hell they're doing and who's calling the shots on what they're seeing. And I struggle with this question for that very reason. I think the quarterback, as a general rule, needs to be the guy that has a good feel for it. I don't think that's the case with a rookie quarterback. I don't think it's his fault. I think they're trying to coach him up to that end. I wish there was a more veteran presence at center, and I mean with the Bears, someone who has been with the Bears and knows what they're trying to do, etc. So I think that communication probably is a bit of a problem, but you know, I'm laying a lot of faith and hopes and dreams on the fact that DeForest Buckner has got an ankle injury and looks like a high ankle sprain, and those things take 6 weeks. So I'm not expecting him to play. And I think having a veteran monster type guy in the middle of the defense, even if he's aging as Buckner, I think losing that helps the Bears. Does that make any sense? But no, I don't know that they're going to be able to fix their communication problems overnight. I think they got to fix their offense. They got to run their offense in a different fashion. And I don't think that I think communication probably is a problem, but I don't think it can be fixed right now with these people.
I agree with you, Melly. This is tough because I don't know if that's the biggest problem, because it's really more about the offensive line. And I guess you could say communication between, you know, Caleb and the offensive line, or, you know, Shane Waldron and the offensive line. But that offensive line to me is more of the bigger problem. And I don't know if communication is going to help with that all together. I do, however, feel a little bit more confident with Williams probably handling the pressure, just because the Colts defense is missing Buckner and it's not as probably great as the Texans defense. So you're playing pretty much a little, probably not as great of a defense. So that gives me a little bit more confidence, but this is a real problem, and it really just goes to the offensive line, and I think you need a lot more than just communication to help this.
But I think that's where it starts. I think that's what he's saying, and I think that when you talk about the whole communication, it's Caleb Williams identifying the fronts and the Caleb Williams communicating with the offensive line, who were communicating with themselves. And also, by the way, the receivers have to be on the same page, because they can't run the wrong routes, because as Cole Kmet told us, that sometimes gets in the way and leads to a sack. They're playing a team, the good news is, they're playing a team that certainly has not historically come after the quarterback at the rate the Texans did. 41% of the time is a heck of a lot of blitzing. And now the Colts last year were dead last in the league in blitzing. Gus Bradley has had a bad start, the defensive coordinator for the Colts, to this season. They're 0-2 for a reason. Their defense is part of that. They can't stop the run, so they can't earn the right to rush the passer. And they can't really earn the right to be that creative or aggressive defensively. Now, if they can do that against the Bears, they probably look at the offensive line of the Bears as an opportunity for them to get well and to get whole. And Caleb Williams is talking about, well, if they can only identify what's coming, they can better handle it when it does come after them and the blitz happens and all those things. So I think that's what he's trying to say. He's trying to also explain that it's either one of two things, and it's easier to acknowledge you need to improve your communication than it is to you need to improve your execution. Because when you say it's about execution, you imply that you're just not good. And I think with communication, when that's the messaging, then you're saying, well, we can get better, because everyone can communicate better. And I think that's probably the right approach to take if you're the quarterback of the Bears.
Oh, boy, that's a tough question.
That's the voice of our 7 o'clock guest, Brad Biggs. Is running game coordinator Chris Morgan getting a free pass with Shane Waldron taking all the heat on the Bears' failed running game? Morgan was promoted from offensive line coach and awarded another title after Luke Getsy was fired. Is there a conflict in the running game?
I don't know if there's a conflict. There's not enough maybe head-to-head conflicts that they're winning.
That's right.
I think that what happens after a game like Sunday night, as disastrous as that was, and it comes after a game where you really weren't good offensively in the opener, all of a sudden it's crisis mode, and I have identified it as a full-fledged crisis with the offense. You drafted touchdowns. What happened to that? You got an offensive line that you thought was pretty good. What happened to that? So what we're used to doing here, and in a lot of NFL cities, is that we point the finger at the offensive coordinator because it's got to be him. Can't be just all the five guys. It's the easiest scapegoat there is. And then, well, if it's not Shane Waldron because he just got here 5 minutes ago, well, it must be the guy that they kept, the only offensive line coach or the offensive position coach that Matt Eberflus retained. So it's got to be Simo, the guy with the nickname, right? Yeah. I don't know about that. Sometimes players are just bad. Sometimes it comes down to the players one-on-one losing battles and guys who aren't playing at a certain level, a skill level, a strength level, whatever it is, however you want to describe it. I read headlines and, boy, the Bears missed out and Clint Kubiak, because look at the Saints. My God, the Saints. They're on historically offensive pace in New Orleans. They got 91 points in two games. Why didn't the Bears hire Clint Kubiak? They would somehow block better. I don't know about that. It's not always the coach. It's not always the scheme. Sometimes it's mano and mano, win a battle, and the Bears are losing too many.
I didn't really think too much about Chris Morgan. I do love this question, but I feel like he got promoted because the running game was pretty good overall last season, but that's mainly because of Justin Fields. So now there's no Fields. You're looking at this, and we're trying to point blame, but I really more still tie it on Waldron because I try to think of that Seahawks offense last season, and I don't – like, their running game was okay, but, like, it didn't stand out to me. When I think about it, I think of three wide receiver sets when it comes to that offense, and you can see it's kind of the same way with this Bears when you got Roma Dunze and then you got Moore and then Keenan Allen whenever he decides to come and play. But I still tie it to Waldron and just how bad and just the center position is and the guard, and they're just no overall just like cohesion with this whole team. So I think that's the main issue when I look at this team overall. I'm going to kind of give, I guess, Chris Morgan a pass right now, but I'm going to still tie to this offensive line and then the system itself in Shane Waldron.
Yeah, they wanted to keep Chris Morgan. They think he's a good offensive line coach, so they threw him a title, running game coordinator, probably gave him a few more bucks. That's basically what happened. I think David is absolutely right. There isn't enough conflict on the offensive line. You know, when you look at a team, you win the point of scrimmage, and that's how you move the ball. If you start lining up so you can run downhill, and then you try to use play action with a lot of your passing game, that just seems to make more sense with the team that is struggling as much as they are in the interior of the line. So I would try that for a change, especially against a really bad a Colts run defense. I would definitely take the invitation they offer you by virtue of their performance over the last two games and accept it. Oh, thank you so much. We will definitely wear black tie. And we will run you over. That is a much appreciated invite.
I'd rather black tie than orange helmet.
That's right. Oh my God! Anything but that orange helmet. But yeah, I don't see conflict between the coordinator and the offensive line coach / running game coordinator. I think that Waldron, this is on him because it's his offense. So he's got to be the guy that makes changes based on the lack of top personnel. They do not have a very good offensive line. Okay, so you can't do some of the things you want to do. Let's try to do the most basic offensive line things you can think of, and that is overpower some people at the line of scrimmage. Use a big package and try to run some people over. That seems like a really good idea to try. And here's hoping they can adjust that quickly. Remember, when they hired Shane Waldron, the thing they said about him versus the other candidates they brought in is they really appreciated his versatility. He was the guy that could do this and do that and do the other. Well, what you're doing isn't working, so try something else. Let's see that versatility that was talked about when you were hired?
Yeah, it's a good question.
How surprised were you that Matt Eberflus announced yesterday no changes to the offensive line would be made due to last Sunday's performance? Why do you think the Bears arrived at this decision?
It's a bit confounding. I think they could have made some changes. I don't know. You know, I mean, moving people from one side to another isn't benching anyone. I don't think there's anything wrong with that idea. I think that, is he saying that the changes this week are due to injury because guys are going to be out or guys are not going to be able to practice and he's looking at other things as a result? I don't know why you would believe that last Sunday's performance was good enough. I understand that it wasn't one guy and it wasn't two guys. There is a whole group, and you can't bench multiple people. And the thing that helps an offensive line is having consistency in the same players and getting used to blocking with the same people. I get all of that. But I think we're two games in and we see that there is an area of the team that is not functioning well and not working together. So you've got to do something to figure that out. But I don't know that that an announcement like he made, and again, it was just a comment that he made in a news conference. I don't know that that isn't saying this guy's not benched; he's hurt. I think there's nothing wrong. Who was starting yesterday? Pryor started. Mark Pryor.
Matt Pryor left guard for Tevin Jenkins.
You said he was the pitcher. Right?
I did not say he was the pitcher.
Calfzilla.
I did not say Calfzilla.
Okay.
Wrong guy. Wrong sport.
I thought you said that the other day.
I did not.
Okay.
I think that was you. I think you're stuck in 2003.
I just think it's funny. Calfzilla. He can't move anyone forward. Damn, he can plant those feet
very good
firmly and stay. He can set an anchor.
And very good at the towel drill.
I would say I'm not that surprised. It's still, even though the offensive line is pretty bad right now, I still think it's a little bit too early. I expect maybe probably about week three, a little changes. And also you tie that in with health. I like, you know, Jenkins banged up. I think Bates is somebody they would prefer to have in that starting lineup kind of offensive line. So right now I still say it's wait and see, especially going against the Coastal. It's like, okay, look, Coach don't have Buckner. We got this offensive line. Let's see how we do here. After this, if it's still the same issue, I could expect change probably around this time, especially I think with their bye week is coming up in week six too. I'm not going to say it's going to take that long if it's this bad, but that's when you can see changes all throughout everything with the Bears.
That's what I'm looking at too, the schedule. The bye week makes sense. Tevin Jenkins getting injured, and obviously they knew that Sunday night when they got home Monday morning that he was compromised. So that would affect your thinking because you don't want to be open to changes if you're trying to figure out if he's even going to be available. And right now with a deep thigh bruise, you just don't know if he will be. I look at Ryan Bates, and until we see him actually play, he's going to be a figment of my imagination.
Right.
We have talked about this guy forever, and he has yet to play a snap for the Bears. They have talked about him even longer because they've always wanted him to be in a Bear uniform. I want to see him play before I actually – is he a rumor? Is he an actual guy? Have we seen him play? I don't know. So when I look at Eberflus saying yesterday there's going to be no change, everyone's got a role to play. You know how I feel about this. Everybody in a football city has got a role to play. Fans, media, coaches, players. Our role is to, like, are you crazy? You got to make changes. This was terrible last Sunday. You got to look at the wholesale changes and consider moving Tevin Jenkins and getting this guy. Their role is – keep it steady. Don't give up. Believe in your guys. Give them another chance. Realize that you're playing a playoff team that's maybe one of the best teams in the AFC. Go back out there against a team that will allow you to get well, establish an identity, and then you build off of that.
And speaking of rumors and the like, ghost players, not only Bates, kind of Kieran Amagaji is in the same state, right? Ooh. Exactly. And the one that I had a chuckle to myself as I read, long lamented, forgotten, Larry Borum's coming back.
He's
Did
coming
you forget
back.
That Larry's out there?
At least he's actually taking a snap with the Bears.
Yeah.
Oh, that's a great question.
Given that Indianapolis has allowed a whopping 474 yards rushing in two games, that's good for 5.1 yards per attempt, will this be the week that the Bears cure all their ills in the running game? Who leads them in rushing on Sunday, and how many yards will that player gain?
It's not even close. The Colts are giving up 237 yards a game, as the numbers indicate. The next worst run defense, Carolina Panthers, at 199.5. So there's a 38-yard difference between the Colts in last place and the second to the worst run defense. That's bad. That's bad. You talk about a speedway in Indy. That should be every running lane that Bears running backs go through. Checkered flag, please. DeAndre Swift will have at least 75 yards. Roschon Johnson, welcome back. He'll have over 40. They'll get Khalil Herbert involved. This is like an old, the run in the Southwest Conference. All three running backs in the backfield will get their due, get their time, and have their yardage. I think this is going to be a day the Bears run over the Colts.
It should be, but you don't know. This will be the tale to me. Like, if you can't run against this team, like, then what are we going to do? And I want to see Roschon Johnson. I want to see more Khalil Herbert. I do want to see him, and I want to see Swift. I just want to see more running plays. I'm tired of the whole RPO run. I don't want to see all that. I just want get a fullback back there, get another tight end, something. I just want to see more running plays. But this should be, I don't know if it will, but this will be the tell test overall. I just want to see a good mix, and I do not want to see Travis Homer at all. I don't want to see him running the ball at all. That does no fear to, I think, no team right now. No disrespect to him, but I'm sorry, I can't. I want to see Herbert, I want to see Johnson, and I definitely want to see Swift. Three running backs going in for the Colts.
Bayless? Is that who?
No Bayless. No Bayless either. No Bayless. He shouldn't be active.
I will predict that it is Khalil Herbert leading the Bears in rushing with 64 yards on Sunday. And that sounds like it's not a lot, but you figure if he can get 64 and you could get Swift 60. And is Roschon Johnson, is he – I saw him get punched.
He's fine.
Is he
he's
okay?
Fine.
Okay.
He's ready to punch back.
Well, let's give him 20 yards.
A smash mouth.
And we'll see how you can add it all up. But right there, you're getting closer, ever so dangerously close to 150 to 200 yards.
So is it going to be over 100? So is that what you got, over 150?
I got him over 150. I got him about 150 yards. I think it's a fool's errand to think they're going to suddenly break 200.
Over 150 would be a good day.
Be a really good day. Good, solid day.
Yeah.
I think, though, that they've got to, run some plays out of just a conventional offense at the line of scrimmage, and that will open up some things, and hopefully that will get them into some play action. They can get the ball down the field after that. But that's the dream, at least for me, going into this game.
It's an interesting question, I think.
What is your reaction to the Brewers clinching the NL Central crown on September 18th and the Cubs falling further out of contention? As absurd as it sounds, a year after poaching manager Craig Counsell from the Brewers, what's the biggest difference between the two franchises now?
Yeah, what's extraordinary is that the Brewers are not spending near the money the Cubs do. And the Brewers have won, what, three division championships
in the last 4 years.
And I think you look at that and you kind of scratch your head a little bit, because the Cubs, were sitting here saying, why aren't they going after Juan Soto? They need to get Juan Soto. They were looking at Otani. The Brewers weren't involved in any of that stuff. And the Brewers aren't going to add Soto to what they're doing. But they have a different mentality, and they have put their team together really well. Their pitching is so much better than I thought it would be when they started getting rid of pitchers. Seems like they make good deals. Seems like they're very fiscally responsible. It seems like much more of the dream that you're putting together than the Cubs are. And I am befuddled by all of their success. It's fairly obvious that, as much as I like what we've seen from the manager, and I know there are those who would question, I think Craig Counsell is going to win and be very good here, and I think he knows what he's doing. He didn't get to bring his whole group with him. So it's like the whole band together without the lead singer. So even if Jerry Garcia dies, you can still have the kind of dead experience by going to a concert with those left behind. And it's happened in history. It's not as good, but it's good. And I think that they've got the sort of consistency that you would love to see the Cubs somehow get. And I think eventually they will get it. But it's the biggest difference between the franchises. The Cubs haven't spent money as well as the Brewers. They just haven't. And I'm hoping that, you know, we start seeing some of the young players coming up, and that's the difference. Like their version of Jackson Chourea comes up and does something, and they're going to be adding to this thing every year now, two or three guys as you move forward.
This season was a failure for the Cubs. You had expectations when you brought in Council that you were supposed to make the playoffs. You didn't, and you took the manager from the team you thought you was going to lessen them, and they still won the division. You are a big market team. This to me lies on the front office. You should be in line. Changes should be made. Now it's just say, okay, we got Council. He was supposed to do more with less, but I feel like it was expected to do more with the same team, because I feel like it was the same team for last year, and you just really changed the manager to me. You got to go out and spend money. You got to get a big market player. I wouldn't even say just Soto. Go out and get Pete Alonso too. Get them both. You're the Cubs. Why not? And you add that, I mean, look, you should be in the playoffs, and it is a failure for this team right now.
So congratulations to the Brewers. This is what the disparity is in terms of payroll. The Cubs are seventh in the league, according to SpotRac. $229 million they spent on players this year and their salaries. The Brewers, half that, $114.9 million. They're 21st in the league. The Cubs are spending twice as much money and having half the fun. They're 10.5 games out. That's embarrassing. So the Brewers, Pat Murphy's law, win anyway. He went find a way to win. They do whatever they need to do. They do get more out of less. They are a team that is the model for smaller market teams, teams that don't want to spend over $200 million or even, heck, $125 million. They find a way. They develop players. They did it without Craig Counsell. And the leader, the band analogy is a good one. You wonder who was really the heart and soul of that band. Maybe he stayed back in Milwaukee. I texted Murph yesterday, last night, congratulated him. He responded in the wee hours of the morning. They were celebrating long into the night in Milwaukee because they deserved to celebrate what they did. Three titles in 4 years? They don't spend that much money to deserve that much success. And they deserve it, though, because they know how to play the right way and they get the most out of their talent. Congratulations.
This will be a pick six. There's your ball game.
What did you make of Adrian Wojnarowski dropping the greatest Woj bomb of all time? His retirement from ESPN in order to accept a general manager job at his alma mater, St. Bonaventure. The role includes NIL allocation, recruiting, and helping coach Mark Schmidt with other aspects of the program.
I think it was a huge surprise, and anybody who respects his work, and so many fans do, so many media members do. If you know him a little bit, yeah, this is great for anyone to be in a position where they can walk away from a job that is as taxing as that one had to be, 24/7 lifestyle, 365, and just do what he wants to do, pursue a passion that he's always maybe wanted to pursue, check a box, and go back to his alma mater, and just get off the treadmill. Get off the treadmill professionally and to take some time to do a job that is not going to be overwhelming but going to be highly rewarding. So great for Woj. This is terrific news, as surprising as what. He will be missed. There's no doubt about that. He will be missed, but you can't help but be happy for him.
I was shocked. Me and Dustin saw this yesterday. We had to check to make sure it wasn't a fake account when we saw it. So I was totally surprised for it, but with that being said, I mean, I'm happy for Woj. If this is what you want to do, you go out on your terms. You got to love that. And, I mean, he wanted to spend more time with his family. I mean, it's taxing. Like you said, 24/7, 365. Like, you're working holidays and stuff like that. So, with that being said, you want to be time with your family. I'm all for that. And, hey, you're kind of close to your school. So, hey, whatever makes you happy, I'm all for it.
Yeah, you know, congratulations to Woj. I think it's unbelievable to watch a guy take a step back like that. He was at the top of his profession. He was the best NBA information guy maybe we've ever seen. You know, the Woj bomb became part of the parlance because he was constantly in touch with everyone and talking to everyone, and he was on his phone every second of the day. Here's the problem with that. The problem with that is that, you know, you are at the beck and call of everyone that decides to contact you, and you have to respond to everyone. And one of the reasons they contact you is they know they're going to get on, they're going to get their information out as quick as possible, and they're going to get a favorable vision of what they want to say. And if you were not responding to them, they're not going to keep calling you. That's just how it works. So it is a 24/7 job, and it is 365. And I mean, this guy, God bless him. You know, he loves basketball. He's going to help out with some NIL stuff. It's an entry level job. He's like, they calling him a general manager. They're created a job for him, and they're going to let him. It's his alma mater. He apparently does a lot of work with them already. They got a fairly decent program. They've had some success. And it's just going to be going from 100 miles an hour to about 35 or so. Now you're driving the speed limit, and you're going to have a much richer personal life than you had before, because pretty much every minute of your day I wouldn't want that job. I wouldn't want to be on the phone that much. I think it's harmful.
If you were St. Bonnie's head coach, would you walk by Woj's office every day just to make sure you still had your job?
I don't think he has control over the coach.
He would know if he does.
It's Schilt. Is that guy Schilt? Is that
no,
right?
I think it's Schmidt, I believe.
Schmidt, okay.
Yeah, I think it's Schmidt.
He's a good coach. They got a pretty decent program. Do you know the Loyola AD was formerly there at St. Bonnie's?
Yeah.
So there is a connection.
Hmm.
We should drop him a note. Get his
right around the corner.
Yeah.
Go Ramblers.
It's coming.
Oh, but today's hockey season, though.
Is it?
Yeah.
Okay.
Training camp opens for the Blackhawks.
Today?
Yes.
Oh, I'm glad you pointed that out.
It's hockey, baby!
We've got the pick or the extra point next. We'll get right to it. Mully and Haw on the score.
Set up this extra point.
It's time for the extra point with Mully and Haw on 670 The Score.
All right, guys. DJ Moore regretted showing emotion on Sunday against the Texans.
I shouldn't have shown as much. But it's still part of the game. You know, like I said, we was one play away from the game changing, and we just couldn't connect. Like, nobody on offense could connect with the one play or get the one play started to get us on track to go up. So, I mean, it's football. Everybody going to have their ups and downs and frustrations. So,
why do you think Moore voiced those regrets now, and do you think he got any pushback internally to do a better job of controlling his emotions?
I don't think he got any pushback. I don't think it was that egregious or bad. It was something that happened in the course of a frustrating game from a player that typically doesn't show frustration. We're so used to seeing the stoic, professional DJ Moore and hearing him every Monday morning at 8 with us. And we asked him about those outbursts, if you want to call them that. And he did not necessarily make it sound as bad as he made it sound yesterday. He watched the game from the TV view. And I think when you were watching on television as we were, they focused on his responses, and then the social media hubbub over him walking past Tyson Bagent and saying something that lip readers everywhere were trying to decipher, which was kind of silly and ridiculous. It's all very silly and ridiculous. DJ Moore doesn't need to apologize for his outburst. It wasn't that bad. It didn't cross a line. Body language is something that it was all screaming frustration from every Bear on Sunday night. I think the reason he addressed it was because he was asked about it. And as we know from talking to him on a regular basis, he tries to be as forthright as possible and doesn't really have anything to hide.
I think DJ Moore, you know, he sees everything. And I remember you guys talking to him, had the interview with him. He saw the video of the, you know, and he tried to downplay it, but he's hearing the national attention. We played audio of Daniel Jeremiah talking about, you know, right here on the score about his body language and his frustration. So the image of DJ Moore is not like that. He's not your, you know, diva wide receiver. And when you see stuff like that, it ties into that whole stigma of, oh, that's the diva wide receiver. I think the game plan was probably a little different. I think coming into this game prior, before they took on the Texans, I think he was supposed to get the ball a lot more with no Keenan Allen. You got Rome Odunze hurt. So it's like, okay, this is just like last season. It's all on me. You don't have Tyler Scott, nobody. So it's just like, okay, I'm going to get most of the targets in this one. And I don't think things went his way, and he didn't have a game that probably he thought, and the frustration showed. But I didn't think he wanted it to show up, maybe Caleb Williams. And I think he felt bad for that aspect of it. And I think that's why he regretted. But at the same time, he said, like, yeah, you know, people get frustrated during the game. And as you should, you know, you expected to win, you expect to play well, and you're not, you're going to get frustrated. But I don't think he wanted to show up as quarterback and made it seem like that. So I think that's why he regretted it.
Yeah, I agree with that. It's interesting because we've talked to him quite a number of times. And he talked about when he was a kid, just playing football at younger levels, he was sometimes the quarterback and the receivers would be like, hey, get me the ball. And these are his friends. And he's like, he said that it makes you feel bad that people feel you're not trying to get them the ball, whatever. I like him a ton. I think he's a good guy. I think that because he got so much response and there were so many people like Daniel Jeremiah who felt he was showing up Caleb Williams, that's why he clarified it, because he wanted to say, and he said that he did self-evaluation with all the noise that was out there, and he saw the photos of himself and the emotion that he showed, the disappointment that was clearly on his face. He wanted to clarify that they were close to making plays and they were one play away, and he kept feeling like they were going to get it. He was frustrated by that. He wasn't trying to show up the quarterback. So he wanted to clarify that little element of it. But, you know, it was interesting he was so aware of how he was perceived that he evaluated himself. And I don't think we'll see it again, because I don't think he was trying to show up the quarterback. I think he was frustrated out of his mind because they were close to making plays, but they couldn't make one. And I think that got to him. I don't think it was that he was mad at the quarterback. People were like, oh, he wanted Justin Fields back. Don't you remember what he said a year ago? I don't think that was the impetus.
I don't think that was the case. Right. I think people are using his words from last year against him, exactly, Looking for something that isn't there.
And I think that's the reason that he wanted to talk about it and wanted to, you know, express regret at showing emotion. But I don't believe for a second that he ever was trying to show up the rookie.
It also might be a part of a unified effort by the Bears to support Caleb Williams publicly, privately, however they need to prop him up if they feel like he's at a point where he needs that. And after a game like Sunday, after getting sacked 7 times, he may need that.
I think we all might need something.
Also taking a hit, too, from the national media, too.
Oh, he's taking a huge hit.
So I think the player's like, okay, this is enough. Let's back him up.
Yeah, he's getting little brothered by C.J. Stroud.
Wow, he said specifically he wasn't trying to little brother.
I know. I'm just teasing. Yeah. But I did not necessarily change my stance from yesterday. But I did appreciate the fact
Stroud
that everybody was talking about it yesterday.
312-644-6767. We're going to get to your phone calls next. Mully and Haw on the Score.
Look, come here. Learn from those mistakes, and everything that you got, bro, is in you already, bro. You're gonna be a hell of a player in this league.
Yep.
All right, boy.
Appreciate it.
For sure.
That was the voice of C.J. Stroud, who raised the ire of Mr. David, among others.
Not really ire.
Big brotherin, little bro.
Come here. Let me tell you. Hey. He didn't raise my ire. He didn't. Stay positive. He did not raise my ire. I addressed it. But look, come here. Let me tell you. If somebody says that to you, come on.
Really? Yeah. I got, you know, when you're a young dude and you're starting out, I felt that was supportive. I felt maybe it was just an effort.
I found it more amusing than annoying, but
okay.
Nonetheless, he addressed it yesterday because of the fallout. Not only here, but elsewhere, people looked at.
He caught a lot of grief.
He caught a lot of grief, and he addressed the grief that he caught.
Yeah.
I had some of the best advice given to me last year. And, you know, me and Caleb, I was not trying to, like, treat him like I was trying to, like, little bro him or nothing. He knows that, too. I have a ton of respect for him. I told him I had respect for him. But I had so many guys coming to me after games last year, and that meant the world to me, that those guys even thought about giving me advice. So I just try to give back to what the game has given to me. So, I wish him the best, man. I want him to do amazing in this league. I think he will. I think that he'll get his groove. And once you get your rhythm, I didn't get my rhythm until like week three, week four. So I can see him, his game picking up from here. And so, and you know, I don't think he was trying to, like, you know, be any towards way. He's just upset that they lost. I totally understand. So I have a ton of respect for that guy, man. I want him to do extremely well, just like any other guy, until we play on that day. You know what I mean? And after the game, we can be cool. You know what I mean? But I'm definitely, you know, rooting for him and want to see him do extremely well.
Yeah. So there you have it. That is the voice of C.J. Stroud, who tried to throw a shoulder around a young Caleb Williams, maybe offer him a lifesaver. I don't think it was meant as any kind of a comeuppance or any way that you took it.
Well, I don't even care about how I took it. You can point a finger at me if you want. It'd be ridiculous to focus on that. But Caleb Williams did not seem to be somebody who was looking for that post-game hug. You just wonder what their relationship is like. They'll be fine moving forward. It goes without saying that C.J. Stroud went to the Ohio State University, just like Caleb Williams' predecessor.
You wonder if there's
a Justin Fields thing, because if you recall, last year, C.J. Stroud was somebody who was pretty vocal about the fact that the Bears should not give up on Justin Fields, knowing that if they did that, the reason they're doing that was because Caleb Williams was arriving.
Right. Yeah.
You never know what role that plays in history.
But I believe him when he says that when veteran quarterbacks said nice things to him, it lifted him a little bit. I don't doubt
that he got a lot of support from veteran quarterbacks. He had a tremendous rookie year.
He's trying to pay it forward.
He's a month older than Caleb Williams.
And he's paying it forward.
Yeah.
He's a year older than him in terms of NFL play.
He's a month older in terms of, like, just...
He's light years older than him in terms of skill level and
22.
Ability to quarterback an NFL team.
Well, he is that because of the experience level. But,
wouldn't you want that, though? Like, everybody said, like, his rookie year was just, like, unheard of to have that type of rookie year, to have that advice from him, and people saying that maybe Caleb can do the same thing as Stroud does. Wouldn't you love to have that advice?
Maybe. Okay. You know what? Maybe in the summer, probably not seconds after I just looked terrible on Monday night or Sunday night football and am facing a 1-1 record after I got sacked 7 times and hit 36 or however many times he was hit. I don't know.
11, but 36 is what it seems.
36 was the pressure. He was pressured 36 times out of 37 passes.
He had legitimate 11 hits other than the 7 sacks.
Yeah, I'd be good with foregoing any post-game advice after I was feeling that low.
Come here.
No.
Get over here.
Maybe not.
Look me in the eyes.
Maybe not.
Listen to what I say to you.
Maybe I don't want to. So.
Look, come here.
No.
Look, come here.
No, big brother of 1 month. I'm sorry. I'm entitled to be as... bugged by that as I want.
You had a tire problem. You can do anything you want.
Do you think that all
takes.
The times that Tom Brady did that to people, do you think secretly some of the players are like, damn him.
Enough, man.
Dude, no.
Brady comes up to you.
I do think, though.
Look, come here. Get over here.
Not necessarily. Gabe Ramirez last night on the Score was really good on this topic. I thought he did tremendous and listened to that for a while while I was out. I look at maybe not C.J. Stroud's case, but in a lot of cases, I wonder
how much you want it.
These post-game little powwows are performative, because everybody knows the microphones are on. Everybody knows the cameras are on. Maybe not in C.J. Stroud's case, but these little post-game things, I would rather see. I'm okay seeing when Joe Burrow and Patrick Mahomes walk by each other and barely acknowledge one another with a nod or a glance or a gesture. That's good. That's
you know,
fine.
You know what's great? It's like if a Japanese pitcher gives a little tip of the cap to a Japanese hitter.
Different sport, different situation.
I'm saying it was beautiful.
And Shota tipping his cap to Shohei and getting that in return was a beautiful moment for Major League Baseball and the Japanese players that are here, playing here. Baseball, different scenario.
But Shota, in fairness, said, come here. Come here. Come on. Get over here.
And if he would have said that after striking out Shohei, then he would have been mocked.
You're not as bad as you look.
Yeah.
You don't suck as much as everyone's saying. Lift a guy up.
It's just one of those things. That's a lot was made out of it. Enough that C.J. Stroud felt compelled to address it. And I'm almost ashamed or embarrassed that I am part of the group of people that noticed that, because I see some of the other people that are making a big deal about it and don't really want to be part of that group. But it did bother me. I can't lie.
That's pretty good.
Can't lie.
All right. You know, we'll have Bigsy come here and we'll say some nice stuff.
Hey, Brad,
to him.
Come here.
Get over here.
You know what? That lead, pretty good, but actually,
drop and give me 20.
Let me work on
whatever.
It. Yeah, whatever.
I'm showing you tough love. All right. Big time next. Molly and Hall on the score.
Look, come here.